football only better. Every team needs an iconic mascot, and our Gunnosaurus is betting guru, Mark O'Hare. Mark, Arsenal the 2.34 favourites here after back-to-back 1-0 wins over Giants, Norwich and Burnley. Tottenham 3.5 outsiders. That seems to me to be too big a gap. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, it is. I think Arsenal are a little bit too short. But before, you know, I think there are actually some green shoots around Arsenal. I know they've only just beaten Burnley and Norwich 1-0 each. But, you know, they got so much grief after three rounds of football where two of the games were against Chelsea and Man City. Doesn't feel
and that
like
was
Tottenham...
just from us.
Exactly. There are caveats to those performances and those results as well. Whereas I don't think Tottenham are getting the same heat. And I know they've earned three more points on the board, but their performances have been really dour, really unadventurous, really quite poor. And I think if you look at pre-match odds and you kind of work out expected points based on the odds, you know, these two teams should really be faring pretty similarly. However, if you look at the underlying metrics, Spurs have been awful and Arsenal have been okay. And I know that's more based around Tottenham's style and approach under Nuno. It's really quite an inspiring contain and counter, see what you can do. Two of their wins, I think, were pretty fortunate. But yeah, Arsenal have been performing better than Spurs. And you look at the major metrics, Spurs are actually based in the bottom three for shots in the box ratio, for non-penalty expected goals ratio. Only Norwich have generated a lower MPXG figure and fewer shots in the box. And we know how difficult Norwich's schedule has been. They've had to play Liverpool and Man City. And of course, they're a newly promoted team as well. So, you know, I'm not very warm on Spurs at all. I know Arsenal aren't exactly thrilling us, but you look at the team that they've been able to field in the last couple of weeks, Aubameyang now leading the line. You look at defensively, White and Gabriel partnered together, Tomiyasu at right back, Partey coming back into holding midfield. That's enormous for Arsenal. And even Ramsdale, who gets plenty of stick and criticism, and understandably so, I think he's added a degree of presence and leadership to that defence as well. And then further forward, Odegaard, his ability to win tight matches, Smith Rowe I thought was lively last week as well. So I do think there's a lot to like about Arsenal going forward, but not at the prices this weekend. So I think we've basically got two, I wouldn't call them defensive coaches, but I certainly think Nuno is probably more on that scale than Arteta. But even still, we talked about the Man City-Chelsea game being early in the season. Must not lose. Quite happy to settle for a share of the spoils. I don't think there's a huge amount of differences there between this match on Sunday, particularly from Nuno's side. He's already under pressure. And if he were to lose this game for Spurs, you know, that pressure gets bigger and bigger. But also, I don't see him just suddenly chucking it all in and going gung-ho because they won in penalties in the League Cup in midweek. So, yeah, I think this could be quite tentative. Kane's not firing for Tottenham. Spurs have scored just 3 goals in 5. Interestingly as well, one or both teams have failed to score in all 10 Premier League games involving these two so far this season. And I think the days when this match was thrilling end-to-end entertainment of 2-2s and 3-3s and 4-3s, I think those are long gone. So I think under 2.5 goals is the angle I want to take here. Happy to oppose goals. Yeah, I'm just not too impressed with either team, but I think there's slightly more to like about Arsenal, even if the price is quite off-putting.
I'd love that to be the tagline on Sky's Super Sunday. Spurs have been awful. Arsenal have been okay. That'll get the pulse racing ahead of the North London Derby. Thrilled to say that odds compiler and betting expert Mark Stinch comes back with us. Stinch, obviously the adrenaline's pumping after Mark's preview of the game. What do you think? Because I'm not on board with Arsenal yet. I completely accept what Mark's saying about they look a bit more solid. But, you know, we have big reservations about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United. I don't really see how it's any different with Arteta at Arsenal, really.
Yeah, definitely. Like when I was looking at this game, when you approach a game as a bettor, you often want to side with a team or oppose a team. I'd quite like to oppose both teams here if possible. Obviously, you can't. So I think Mark's absolutely right. Like the fact that Tottenham aren't getting any grief is probably down to the results bias. You know, oh, they've won 3 games. They're really good. Well, I think you look at expected points, Tottenham are in the bottom five. I think they might only have scored 1 goal from open play, heavily reliant on Son. Kane looks a little bit disinterested. So maybe that's why Arsenal are rated slightly better team in the market, going off at 5-4. Like if they were equal in terms of ability, once you applied home advantage, you look around about 6-4, 13-8. So maybe that's why they're slightly favourites. But yeah, I would just want to avoid everything. I think unders make sense. But again, you know, when you've got players like Aubameyang, Kane, Son, Pepe, you know, they're capable of scoring out of nothing. So that would be my sort of only reservation at 4-6 when if you were taking the unders.
Well, if this was a betting university, Jason Murphy would be the dean. He is a trader extraordinaire and he's back with us. Jason, what's your view on this North London derby?
Yeah, when you've seen the matchup, I wanted to side with Arsenal and I had a look at the price, you know, 236, 238, and I'm okay with it, but I won't be backing it. And I've no reason to side with Spurs. Just because it's a derby, I think it's always good to touch on home advantage, and it's always reduced in a derby for two main reasons, I think. First of all, travel distance. Obviously, the away team isn't coming far. They all slept in their own beds the night before. And also, home advantage is partly when the away team comes and they don't give 100%. You can't give more than 100%, but you can certainly give less than it. But for a derby game as an away team, there's no excuse for phoning it in. The fans will be watching on TV, on Twitter, you'll be getting hammered. So that's why home advantage, I think, in derbies does be slightly reduced. And factoring it all in, like Mark says, there's green shoots around Arsenal. I think they're moving in the right direction, whereas Spurs, big concerns I had with Nuno coming in. I thought he'd improve them defensively, but wouldn't add much to them offensively. And yeah, real concerns over Spurs. So nothing to touch in the match price. Looking for an angle, what I would give is Kieran Tierney, if he starts, he's a slight doubt. Or Saka, if he starts on the left-hand side. They're both 9-2 each to have an anytime assist. And a couple of reasons behind that. First of all, Emerson Royal playing right back. I don't know, did anyone see what Spurs tweeted after his debut against Palace?
Go on.
Essentially, the day after, they've gotten beaten 3-0 by Palace. Zaha has absolutely torn them to shreds. And the Spurs Twitter account has this picture of kind of Zaha lying on the ground. And it's the camera angles looking up at Emerson Royal like he's a king. And he's after getting the run around for 90 minutes. And they got spanked 3-0. Now, when
it's
Twitter
the power of
do
marketing, that is, Jason.
I think it's almost genius. As in, like, do they know if we do this, this is going to get talked about, and hence we are talking about it. Maybe there is just genius in it. But essentially with Emerson Royal there, he got the runaround against Saha. Last week, particularly in the second half, Alonso had a field day. He could do what he wanted. Alonso got, you know, he kept coming inside Alonso. I don't think Tierney will come inside as much. Hence why it's more of an assist rather than Tierney getting on the shots. And also, this matchup last season as well, it was Matt Doherty was right back with Holberg trying to protect that side with him, with Mourinho in charge. But even that game last season, it was Kieran Tierney again. Emily Smith-Rowe was more on the left-hand side and Odegaard was coming out as well. And that's where they created the goal from, down the left-hand side. They got a lot of joy. So just for this particular matchup with Emerson Royal as the right back, Tierney, if he's fit, I just think it's an interesting angle when there's not a whole lot in the match odds doing it for me. So have a look and maybe in your bet builders, and that's one I'd have a look anytime assist for Saka or Kieran Tierney.
Well, you mentioned the bet builder. There are fantastic multiples offers running every day. Bet £20 on multiples or bet builders. Receive a £5 free bet to use on multiples or bet builders. T's and C's apply. We move from an iconic derby to a curious rivalry as Crystal Palace take on Brighton on Monday night. Palace 3.1, inform Brighton 2.64. Stinch, I'm going to start with you. We gave Brighton a fair bit of stick last season, or I did anyway, for constantly missing chances and underperforming their XG. But they do look good this season, don't they? And, you know, joking aside, it's quite clear the incredible job that Graham Potter's done.
Yeah, he's transitioned them, hasn't he, from a team that probably just wants to stay in the league to now they're being a progressive team. And, you know, they're arguably better than the two teams we just mentioned in Arsenal and Spurs. I'll be fascinated to see what the prices are when they meet later on in the season. You know, Brighton are going off favourites most weeks now against the non-big six teams. And, you know, their background obviously is their own by somebody who's been in the betting industry and is an expert. So it's no surprise to see they've gone down this analytical route, and Graham Potter seems to be doing a great job at carrying it off. And I think this season what we're seeing so far is that their efficiency has just massively improved, or maybe that's just, you know, luck evening itself out over a long spread of games. In this match, like, again, I don't want to try and bang on about the same things as in previous weeks, but I just can't believe the low goal expectancy we've got in this game again. Over 2.5 goals is 5-4, so unders is just 4-7. The market is anticipating just 2.3 goals, and, you know, put that into context, so far we're seeing 2.64 in the Premier League this season, so that's the sort of disparity that I'm looking at. Last season 2.69, and the season before 2.72, so it's very, very similar. It doesn't really change over the last few seasons. We're looking around about 2.65, 2.7 on average. And for me, again, like, unless you've got an overly defensive team involved, I don't see any reason why the odds shouldn't be closer to what they expect these long-term Premier League averages are showing. So I would, you know, I would expect unders to be favourite, but you know, a lot closer, sort of 3-4 or something like that. And I think, you know, this is a match between a team. Palace, the reason the odds are like this is because Palace are seen as this defensive, rigid team. But I think with Patrick Vieira, they're shifting away from that. Mark will probably be able to tell you a bit more about his time in France last season. But in the MLS, it was the games were a bit mad. And I think I'm not sure of his credentials, really. I don't think he should be a Premier League boss. I watched a couple of their games recently. Against Liverpool, they conceded 3 goals, but they're all from corners. Now, corners should really be, if you've got two teams that are goals apart, corners should really be a bit of a leveler. You know, it's difficult for somebody to sprint past you at a corner, or to, you know, you shouldn't really be losing your man. But all 3 goals they conceded last week were on the second phase. And just, you know, the Salah goal, for example, is just down to pure laziness. And I look at Joachim Andersen, who Lyon paid 26 million for, and they were so impressed they loaned him to Fulham. So I was shocked to see that Palace paid 20 million for him. I just think it's absolutely crazy. Saw him away at West Ham and he was absolutely all over the place. But at least, you know, at least going forward, Palace now have a few more options in attack with Odson Edouard. You know, I think I was very surprised that no one else was interested in him. You know, he's got that background of being at PSG, and PSG have, you know, as you've seen with people like Nkunku, they've developed a lot of good youth players that have since left or they're continuing to develop. So I'm quite excited for him as if I was a Palace fan. As for Brighton, defensively, I think they always give you a chance. They decided just to bank the Ben White money. I think that makes perfect sense. Why go out there and do what Palace have done and waste 20-odd million on a defender like Anderson? So in return, they've just sort of settled on Shane Duffy, but they obviously loaned him out last season to probably one of the worst Celtic teams in years, and now he's starting every week. So I think both teams are going to give chances at the back. And, you know, the bet I'm going for is over 2 goals on the exchange, around about 1.75. So the only way the bet is going to lose if there's 0 or 1 goals. And this bet would have only lost in 1 of Palace's 5 games and only 1 in Brighton's 5 games. So I mentioned last week about sustainable edges. I'm just continuing down this line of taking over 2 goals when we can get our money back if there's only 2. And, you know, the Premier League, I believe most games should be, you know, you should be betting over or under 2.5. So to be able to have the opportunity to get a push if there's only 2, again, I just think long term, it's the, you know, the value bet.
Well, let's find out if Jason has calmed down after the Shane Duffy slander and what his angle is on this particular game, Jason.
Yeah, just on Shane Duffy, as in, like, you know, footballers are only human too, and he has had quite a difficult year for personal reasons, and he was a shadow of himself at Celtic, but it's great as an Irish fan to see him back in the Premier League, and he's actually got off to a decent start, I think, with Brighton and playing what the football he's capable of playing. And listen, he's always a threat at set pieces, so, you know, you can always have a look there, especially with Palace after last week against Liverpool, the 3 goals. I know they're all on second phases, and it's right what Stinch alludes to there, but he always carries a threat and is always worth a look in the anytime goal scorer market. For this game, normally Monday nights, it's not always the best football match that's on. And I know myself and Kev, you know, Married at First Sight, I think it's the last week next week. So,
oh, it's been quality. It's a podcast in itself.
But I'll be honest, this time I actually think this will be a really good watch, particularly with Brighton. One of the main reasons is Tariq Lamptey is back playing his first game in 9 months midweek. He's phenomenal to watch when he opens up the legs and gets down the wing. And on the other side, Mark Cucurella, who I've been absolutely loved watching at Ibar Getafe the last couple of seasons. He's Barcelona bred and he's got that attacking flair. He's the two of them in this Brighton team attacking down the wings means Brighton have always been a great watch, but they're going to be a great watch going forward this season. On the Palace side, you have Zaha as well. So many, many reasons to watch this game. In terms of the prices, I can't back Brighton as favourites. Reason being, if you look at their last two results, very lucky against Leicester last week. There was a couple of two really bad decisions, I think, for goals being outruled. And the week before against Brentford, it's, you know, they didn't win the XG. It's a last very late goal that wins them the game. And sometimes you can get this kind of hot hand fallacy where the market is just looking at results as opposed to what actually happened in the game. And I think Brighton, they might be giving them just a little bit too much credit for their start to the season. Whereas Palace, you might see the 3-0 defeat against Liverpool. But like I say, it was second phase off. Don't get me wrong, Liverpool dominated and Liverpool dominate many, many teams. But I think Palace should have had a penalty as well. Tomiskus, it's a pull at the back post. It should have been a penalty to Palace. So for those reasons, I can't back either side. I like the Palace team. I liked Anderson at Fulham last season, but fully respect Stinch's opinion. I haven't seen him in the flesh. And when you actually watch these players in the flesh, you see a lot more. But defensively, Fulham's XG against last season was really, really good, particularly after they got him from Lyon. What I like about Palace is the fact that it allows Kouyaté to move into the midfield, and I really like the Palace midfield with Gallagher in there as well, and MacArthur, who's always been consistent and delivered for Palace for all these years in the Premier League. So yeah, I'm talking a lot here, but I'm not really going to give you anything other than the draw, just at the bigger price. If you are watching it, opportunity to trade out at half time, particularly if it is going to be low scoring. But again, the angle that Stinch has alluded to there is definitely worth looking at in Premier League games going forward, because given the attacking talent for any game that's on show, you definitely like to think that you get your money's worth and you'll see a couple of goals in any game. But listen, yeah, definitely I'll be tuned in for the first half and we'll see at halftime whether we watch the second half or we switch over to E4.
A couple of new shows coming your way. One of them is an hour-long special where Jason and Stinch just have a fight about centre-backs. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And the other one is Married at First Sight, Only Better, which is me and Jason 4 hours each week talking about each episode. That's going to be a lot of fun. Let's zip back in time from Monday to Sunday. We can do that. To take in Southampton against Wolves. Jason, Wolves are a curious side. They seem to play quite well most weeks, but they can't get the results to match.
Not yet, no. I suppose I'll start with that. First of all, I think the match prices are wrong. It's kind of hovering around Pick'em. And the reason being, Wolves, they lost their first three games, but after that result against United and people kind of talking about the XG and all these shots that they've had, the market has really liked Wolves for the last two games. And it's been different to the... I didn't agree with the prices that went off. Now, the market seems like they were right against Watford. Wolves won that game, but the market seems like they were wrong against Brentford. And I think the market is wrong having Wolves as close as they do to Southampton for this match. So that's first and foremost. When I looked at it, there was one unusual trend where the last six meetings between these sides, including the FA Cup game, Southampton scored the first goal in all six. And you're kind of thinking, is that quirky or is there something else to it? So I had a look into the numbers. And if you look at the Premier League last season, Southampton scored first in 18 of their 38 games, 12 of their 19 at home, and their average when they opened the scoring was really early, about the 26th minute. And the trader head, not that the stats will tell you, but we'll know from watching Southampton that they start real high energy. That's how it is under Hasenhüttl, and sometimes you know, they're burnt out come the second half. So Southampton to start like a whirlwind in a matchup against a Wolves team that, if you look at their numbers from last season, they concede the average goal most times. They've only scored the opening goal in 10 of their 38 games last season, and when they scored the opening goal, on average it wasn't until the second half, the 51st minute. So that is unusual. The last six meetings Southampton scored first, but the playing styles and the stats back it up, and the fact that the match price has them picking, as that filters down into some of the derivative markets, it means there's more value. So the tip I'm going to give you is Southampton to score the first goal at 10 to 11. If the match odds is pretty much pick 'em, you know, a coin toss almost 10 to 11 either side, also you have the nil-nil, no goals being scored. Like, there's value in that 10 to 11 for me for those factors that I've outlined. But if you wanted to just have a look at that in a bet builder, if you're watching the game, or if you're doing a Sunday Acca and you like just doing your match odds, there's value in the Southampton price. Touched on it with the Saturday when we did the treble for the Saturday show. Southampton went off 6-5 at home to Wolves last season without fans. So we have a full fans here in St. Mary's. There's been two changes to the Southampton team. Danny Ings is gone, but they brought in Adam Armstrong. Fantastic for Blackburn in the Championship last season. And Vestergaard is gone, but they're going to see the best of Mohamed Salisu, who they got from Valladolid, but he was injured for most of last season. They'll see the best of him. So for the price to go 6-5 to pick him when you've just had those changes and full fans coming in, it just doesn't make sense to me. And Southampton, I'd happily back them at anything like 13-8 or bigger, depending on what it is come Sunday.
Now, I know it's frustrating when you get frozen out of a bet, so Betfair's offering no cash-out suspensions on match odds markets on the sportsbook, even during VAR reviews or when there's a penalty. Let's go to Norway, I hear you cry. OK, fine. Mark O'Hare's going to treat us to a game involving the champions Bodo Glimt.
Yeah, quite a historic achievement for Bodo last season, winning the title for the first time in 100 years. The first Arctic team to do it as well in Norway. And they did it breaking all sorts of records, playing some quite fabulous football, really, all with a budget which is basically half of what the leading lights in Norway have themselves. But understandably so, quite a few of their big name players were picked off by all other clubs. They've had to rebuild, but they're still top of the league in Norway. They haven't been anywhere near as dominant as they have been in the previous campaign, but two-thirds through the campaign, they're top of the table. It's been a really quite exciting title race, actually. They're just 1 point ahead of Molde, and actually there's only 4 points separating the top five as well. But Bodo have been finding a bit of form recently, 4 wins in 5, unbeaten in 7. And they have got a tricky game this weekend against Vålerenga on Sunday. And Molde have to play Viking as well, which is a tricky game for them. So there's going to be a few twists and turns this season. But I do like Bodo's chances of getting a victory this weekend. I think they're slightly underrated as well, if you consider they're still top of the charts, or at least in the top two for almost all the major metrics, XG, shots, shots in the box, chances, etc. And at home, they're also very, very good, not just at creating chances, but converting. And they're averaging well over 2 non-penalty XG per game themselves, and scoring at least twice in 8 of those 10 games. They've scored twice or more in 13 of 19 league games. So yeah, it's obviously no surprise with the sportsbook are offering just 1.5, 2-1 on Bodo to win this game. I still think it should be a little bit shorter. Vålerenga are 11 points behind them. They've collected 70% of their points against the bottom half and won just once in their last 9, and their recent away form has been pretty poor as well. So obviously we're not going to put up a 1.5 shot, but we can boost that 1.5 to 2.6, which is a significant leap, if you like, in the odds for Bodo to win and both teams to score. This is a Bodo team who have now conceded in 10 of the last 12 league games, playing a Vålerenga team who have only failed to score once all season, and they've scored in all 9 games against the top half. They've already scored 3 times away at Molde, and they've scored in 21 of the last 24 away games, going back to the last season as well. And this term alone, 16 of their 19 league games have seen both teams scoring. So I think that leap from 1 to 2 to 8 to 5 in fractions, 1.5 to 2.6 in decimals, I think that's really big, considering we're basically looking for Bodo to win and both teams to score on Sunday evening.
And Mark does have a very exciting documentary coming out called Ark Tiki Taka, which is the Bodo Glimt story. It's very, very good. 6 hours long, so it's a little bit long, but
worth being involved in that documentary, Kevin.
It's
going right
to happen. Ark Tiki Taka, we are going to make that show. We'll get on to Betfair. They can fund it. I can see the bosses shaking their heads immediately. Elsewhere on the continent, Barcelona. Now, at time of recording, we don't know how they've got on against Cadiz, but they've got Levante this weekend. Serious, serious tension at the moment between the president, Joan Laporta, and the coach, Ronald Koeman. They were absolutely dreadful against Granada on Monday. They slung in 54 crosses, only grabbed a late equaliser in that 1-1 draw. Stinch, it's quite hard to back Barcelona with any kind of confidence at the moment, isn't it?
It is, but I think actually, obviously, we don't know how they're going to get on against Cadiz before we talk about this one, but I think this could be the perfect game for them to get back on track, given Levante's troubles. They failed to win their last 14 matches, Levante. I just think this is the perfect opportunity for Barca to get back on track. Ousmane Dembele is back in training. I don't know if he'll be available, but at least he's back in training. So there's some, shoots of positivity there. Barca are 1-3 to win this. So probably most people, again, thinking, why would he want to go near them? But I just think that, the market doesn't often get it wrong, and clearly the market's not completely deserting them just yet. But I think this is more opposing Levante, basically. I mentioned before about approaching a game and who you want to get on side and who you want to oppose at odds. And I just think opposing Levante is the way to go. The bet I'm looking at is Barcelona to win and under 4.5 goals at 1.8. Regularly, we're talking about a team to win an under 3.5. And I just think this is going to be low scoring. And I think it's fantastic that we can get that extra goal on our side. It's not as if Barcelona's team is full of terrible players, and they are capable. The likes of Depay and Coutinho are capable of scoring low quality chances out of nowhere. And to be fair, though, Levante have given Barca, good games the last few meetings at the new camp. Barca have only won them 1-0, 2-1 and 1-0. So they've not exactly been goal fest. And actually, Levante's games away from home have followed a bit of a trend of trying to keep things tight. 15 of their last 20 matches have gone under 2.5 goals. So with the goal line set at sort of 3.25 here, I don't really want to be going unders in a game involving Barcelona at that line, but I'm quite happy to chance that they still win and get the under 4.5 line. You just look at the maths involved. It's not an exact science, but it's good for a guide. So Barca are 1-3 to win, and under 4.5 goals is 1-4. So if you just multiply them, that would be 4-6. Yeah, we can get 4-5. So I say it's not an exact science, but it just gives you a little guide that we're taking the favourite. The heavy favourite to win the game and the heavy favourite in the goal line, and we're getting a decent price at 1.8. So that's the route I'm going down. I was really tempted to go with the unders at 3.25, but I just think getting that extra goal is really massive. So I think Jason's got a view, so I'm really fascinated to hear his angle.
You've got Jason all excited now with all that maths. Jason, what have you got for us? That's what he lives for, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about this specific match. I'm going to talk basically about Barcelona and the market this season on them. At the moment, the market is staying on that Barcelona sinking ship, and the longer the market stays on that ship, the happier I'll be. The approach I'll give you here that you could look at as a possible strategy is essentially lay Barcelona in every game in the league this season. So be consistent in that. If you lay them to win a euro or lay them to win €5 in each match, come the end of the season, what profit could you be potentially looking at? The test case I'll give you, we've seen a club legend leave, Messi. How do you replace him? You can't. If we go back to Man United and Ferguson leaving, 89 points, finish up as champions, he's gone. It's a terrible squad that they're left with. David Moyes comes in, 6-year contract, barely gets 6 months. If you led United to win a consistent amount for every game throughout that season, come the end of that season that Moyes was in charge, you would have made about 17% on your investment. If you apply the same logic to Barcelona last season, you would have made 13% on your investment. So the market, okay, there's variance, there's results, but the market was wrong on United that season. The market was wrong on Barcelona more often than not last season. And for the opening four games that Barcelona played this season, based on my ratings and the prices they've gone off, and accounting for Messi, Griezmann, even though he wasn't spectacular, and all the changes and what's going on there, and, Koeman and throwing whoever he throws up top, Barcelona have been going off too short for the prices in the first four games of this season. So, Cadiz, Levante, at time of recording, I think the market has got a bit stung, and it's reacting a bit, and Koeman coming in and, he's not answering questions. He's giving statements in press conferences. But for specific games, stinch on the Levante, he could be 100% right that actually that Barcelona price is right, given the terrible run Levante are on. But over the course of the season, I'm not saying you should blindly lay them. Like, it's all about the price in every game. But if you are to do that for the 38 games, because of the name and the market and just the money follows the big names. We've seen it in Champions League against Bayern Munich. I say now you could consistently lay Barcelona to win a fixed amount between now and the end of the season. And I'd be surprised if the market holds its current opinion that you don't actually make a profit come the end of the season.
Interesting stuff, and worth bearing in mind that it can be a long-term thing, can't it, Jason? Obviously, we talk about matches individually and we talk about, you know, we preview weekend to weekend, but there's definitely value in taking the long-term view and then seeing that through, isn't there?
Yeah, like I said, outrights are always a lot slower than match prices to correct. So if Barcelona continue to be as bad as they are, the market should react to that. And what I've said there might not hold true, but it might hold true long enough that there's still going to be an edge come the end of the season. And you still have to get the results. Always remember that variance as well over 38 games can go for you and against you. There's no guarantees with betting, but always try and be on at the right price. And at the moment, the right price to be on is laying Barcelona. And in terms of outrights then, because of the name that they are, you'll tend to see that they'll take up too much of the market. So have a look in the top four market at the moment for La Liga. Real, Atletico nailed on, Sevilla odds on. But have a look there, maybe Villarreal, if they stop drawing games, they're almost like Ted Lasso there, so yeah, Richmond. But if you have a look at any of those, hovering around those La Liga spots, looking to get in top four, Sociedad, whoever it may be, because Barcelona take up too much of that market at the moment. It's going to be fascinating to watch, but that's what happens when you lose club legends, whether it's Messi or Ferguson. It's an adjustment period and the markets can be slow to adjust.
Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Loads of good football content and indeed Ryder Cup content on our website, betting.betfair.com. So make sure you check that out. From Mark, from Stinch, from Jason, and from me, it's goodbye for now.